Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by the great people at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades because they've been able to find their customers the insurance that covers them. They find them the best price. And because the customer comes first, they make sure you get updates. They make sure that along the way, if there are any changes, they make sure you're taken care of. And if there's a claim, they act as if it happened to them. It's a real partnership between Purdy Insurance and you. Go to Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Matt Leon in a few moments. First, our play-by-play call of the day. He had to say it six times yesterday, so at some point, Bill Hillgrove got really good at calling it.
Ben in the gun, bunch tight left, Bell to his right. From his 11-yard line. Here's the snap. He wants to throw it. He flushed out of the pocket, rolling right. Throws it on the run.
Yep, first down.
First down!
Whoa!
Antonio Brown! And he gets out of bounds at the 19-yard line. Needed four, got eight. And all of a sudden, Arrowhead isn't quite as loud.
Yeah, that was the completion to Antonio Brown. I think it was, what, the first completion Roethlisberger had, since the first quarter, right? No? Am I wrong about that? Just kidding, Sean.
I know you are.
It's a clutch play by Roethlisberger last night.
I kept saying in the timeout, run it, just give it to 2-6. And it's like, oh, man, they're passing. Oh, I.
Well,
that was a gutsy call.
I thought that was fine. I applauded the call. In other words, look, you want to go, you know, you want to win, just go and win it. Well, that's a play where you got a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback. Okay, you got an All-Pro wideout, go and win it. That's what I liked yesterday about the Peyton Banks play on Saturday. Penn State was down 48-45, and you notice they ran a three-point play for him. And you know what I loved about that? Is that Penn State basketball for many, many years has played for field goals, and there they played for a touchdown. I loved it. Okay? They decided they're going to play for touchdowns. If he missed it, the game's over. They're not going to win the game if he misses the shot. Instead, they'd rather take the shot, take the chance at it. He made the shot. All right. And, Jason Garrett, you don't clock it with 48 seconds left of the other team on the Teals. I mean, you handed Green Bay a down and you handed them the ball back. I mean, that was really lousy clock management by the Cowboys at the end of regulation. It really was. And you take that thing and you drain that thing to in such a way where it just you have no shot. And like you know, the only three outcomes: you miss the field goal and lose the game, all right, or you make the field goal and go to overtime, or you score a touchdown and win it. Okay. At the end of the game, the only outcome you don't have in there is that they get the ball back, drive down, and kick a field goal and win. But they brought that into it because of poor clock management. Oh well. It was a great, great game, though. Did you see the TV ratings on that? 48.5 million viewers for the Cowboys-Packers game. Final 2 minutes of the game at 7:45 Eastern time. 62.4 million viewers. And the Steeler game, the rating was like 21 or 22 last night. Okay? The days of the Sunday 1 o'clock divisional playoff game are now over. They're going to have a primetime game on Saturday and a primetime game on Sunday. Last night, and they had the perfect combo. They had the Steelers playing, universally popular, Chiefs, have their own level of popularity, not to the level of the Steelers, but they had the perfect combo yesterday. I mean, the NFL reaped in great rewards because they had Green Bay, Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City. It's a pretty good foursome to have out there to draw people to watch. Right now, the one thing that the NFL's worried about is Atlanta wins on Sunday. It's like, okay, you know, they'll have to accept it, but still, the Falcons are not a great ratings draw. All right, let's bring in Matt Leon now from KYW in Philadelphia. So we go from Pittsburgh with David Todd to Matt Leon. My friend, it is always good to hear you on the other end of the line.
I can't complain. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Okay, so we're at that interesting spot right now where the Eagles are done, as ironically are the Cowboys. That probably makes the Eagles fans a bit, at least somewhat joyful on this particular day, because if the Eagles can't be there, they don't want Dallas there, do they?
Oh, no question. More than one person has pointed out that Carson Wentz won as many playoff games as Dak Prescott this year.
Oh, that's just brutal.
And I say that. Prescott was wonderful bringing them back, and they really played really well, but we don't let the facts get in the way of good fun.
No, no, not in Philadelphia. No, that doesn't happen. No, that does not happen. In looking at that football team right now, the next thing they have to do is start shaping what do they want to do in free agency and what do they want to do with the draft. So give me a checklist that you think that they have to look at right away in Philadelphia about free agency in combination with the draft.
I think that right at the top of the list are cornerback and wide receiver. Those are the two positions that they desperately need help. And as much talk, exhaustive talk, as there is about the wide receiver position, I think cornerback is the bigger need. I think they may start from scratch at the cornerback position this coming year, as you might not see any of the guys back. Maybe Jalen Mills, the rookie who was a seventh-round pick as a slot guy, but Leotis McKelvin won't be here. Wait and see about Nolan Carroll. But I think they need cornerback. Wide receiver, obviously. You could see a lot of turnover at that position as well. Probably a running back. Ryan Matthews won't be back. And Darren Sproles has one season left, and he's basically, as good as he is, he's not a guy that obviously can carry the load, so they're going to need some sort of committee or find a guy to be the guy there. And then I think after that you go along the offensive line, and probably they could use another defensive lineman. The offensive line played well, but Jason Peters is getting another year older. Yes, Lane Johnson is great, but he's already got two strikes. If he has another mess up with PEDs again, they lose him. They basically lose him. I think it's for 2 years. So you've got to keep that in the back of your mind. Jason Kelce played better at the center position at the second half of the season, but he is also getting older. They don't have much depth along the offensive line, so they could use help there. But other than that, I think they're in great shape for the foreseeable future.
Okay, so that would be the checklist there. How did you feel in the end watching Doug Peterson, his first year as a head coach? What were the pluses and a couple things where maybe you feel he needs to improve?
I think he did a very good job play calling for the most part. There were some head scratchers and some late game decisions. But as far as putting together an offense and getting the most out of Carson Wentz and utilizing his strength, I think he did a good job, especially considering their woeful lack of breakaway talent at the skill positions. There were some decisions kind of within the play calling that were kind of head scratchers, and he kind of, as I guess most coaches would, kind of dug in when questioned about them and had a hard time admitting mistakes. I think he has the locker room, which I think is big. I think he did a nice job because things looked pretty bleak there after they got blown out in Cincinnati, and you thought that the last four or five games of the season might be just an absolute disaster. But to his credit and to the team's credit, they pulled it out. Maybe they didn't win all the games down the stretch, but they stayed competitive, and winning the last two gave everyone a little bit more bounce in their step going into the offseason. So overall, for a guy who was in his first year as a head coach and really his first year above a position coach, I know he was quote-unquote the offensive coordinator in Kansas City, but he hadn't called plays for an entire game there, so I think it's hard to say how much he was doing as an OC there. I think he did pretty good. I'd probably go B-minus, C-plus for year one, which I think is pretty good considering their lack of talent for the most part, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. I know Dick Girardi interviewed T.J. McConnell the other day after they had the big win over the Knicks. What is starting to fall into place for the Sixers on the floor, because they're a team that you really are not in the mood to face anymore?
No, I mean, it starts with Joel Embiid. I mean, obviously that's simplistic, but he is becoming, when he was coming out of college, everyone said, well, he could be this, but, you know, well, he is becoming what everybody said he could be. He scores 20 points by accident. I think, and don't quote me on the stat, but he's something like the first player to ever score 20 or more in 7 consecutive games without playing 30 minutes in any of them.
I believe that's correct.
Or something like that. I mean, and he makes it look effortlessly. And this is not a guy that's just bigger, stronger than everyone and pounding it in from 2 feet and in. This is a kid that hits the three. This is a kid that has a jumper. This is a kid who has moves off the dribble. Incredibly fluid and has a personality that he has dragged this entire team, I truly believe, out of the abyss, and now has them believing that they can win games and that they should win games. I mean, we've spent 3-plus years watching this team, number one, not be very good, but number two, finding new and exciting ways to grab defeat from the jaws of victory late in games. I can't tell you how many times you've turned on a game with 6 minutes left and they're up 6 and you just kind of shake your head and tell yourself, nope, and they end up losing by 5 going away. That's not really happening anymore. They won a couple of games at the buzzer. Obviously, that T.J. McConnell jumper that beat the Knicks was all over the place, and rightfully so. But I think it stems from Embiid. I mean, I think you got to give Brett Brown an awful lot of credit, the head coach, for staying positive, and you're starting to see the fruits of some of his labor. But I think Embiid is really the bellwether, not just from a talent standpoint, but from an attitude, getting people to believe. And he's created a buzz that I haven't seen about the Sixers since the height of Iverson. And we're still very early into it. But I would be stunned if Embiid does end up going to the NBA All-Star game. And he has really taken this city by storm, because the thing about it, the basketball is special, and that's one thing. But the off-court stuff, the social media, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
And you know what it is about it? It's not just that it's funny, it's that it's genuine. This is not a guy doing this because this is what his handler said he should do, or doing photo ops because it's good. This is a kid, I think, who genuinely can't believe he's allowed to have this much fun, and it's all good-natured. None of it is angry or negative. It's just fun, and I think that's what really makes it stand out, is it's just a kid who's having a great time with what he gets to do.
Are the fans noticing?
Oh, gosh, yes. There is so much talk about Embiid. It's hard to go many places without having people go trust the process. And, obviously that goes back to Sam Hinkie, the old GM, when during the darkest days of the rebuild would tell people, you have to trust the process. We're building for something. You have to trust the process. Embiid has taken it upon himself to call himself the process. And it has taken on a whole new light. And it's fun. It really is fun. And I have to tell you, there is nothing more fun in sports, I think, at any level, than the first time a group starts to ascend, when there's no expectations and everything is fun and new, and you just kind of take it game by game, day by day. You're not worried about matchups. You're not worried about the baggage of last year's playoff loss. You're not worried about this. It's just fun, and it doesn't happen often. And I think that's what you're seeing people here. For the first time, they're just kind of jumping on here, and it's just kind of fun to watch Sixers basketball. It's fun to watch Embiid and see where it goes.
And, and that's the part that's been fun, is to see people get engaged, because where is Simmons right now? I mean, is there any gauge on where he is? Because obviously you don't want to rush him back, because you want to make sure that his injury is solved and it's a long-term solution. Where is he?
He just started doing some, like, 5-on-0 shooting at practice. It all runs together. I think it was Boston. He actually traveled for the first time when they played the Celtics a week ago.
Okay.
So it's moving along. It's moving along. Like you said, you don't want to rush it, but, you know, it's funny. A couple weeks ago, or maybe it was just a week ago, Joel Embiid kind of said after a game, like, you know, we're only 7-8 games out of a playoff spot, and everyone kind of had a good laugh. And I kind of look at it and go, well, you know, it's not crazy. Do I think it's going to happen? No, but if you get to, like, St. Patrick's Day and you can get within 3 or 4 games of
Agreed.
The final playoff spot,
Agreed.
You know, there's a lot of bad teams in the NBA, and then there's even more teams that fold up to 10th the last month that you can take advantage of. And more nights often than not, the Sixers are going to have the best team on the court with them, the best player on the court in Embiid. So my point is, if you kind of get close to that point, you know, I would think, you know, if things start going, keep going in this direction, when Simmons is ready, I think you roll him out there, and I think it's going to be sooner rather than later.
When Embiid made the comment, I didn't laugh. I mean, some people are like, oh, you know, it's like, no, have you watched? I think you have to watch the games to know that what he said, he was dead serious, and guess what? He wasn't completely wrong.
Yeah, no, and the thing they've got a nice, I mean, you know, they've got Embiid, and now that, you know, for better or for worse, and this is a different discussion, now that they've kind of decided that Jahlil Okafor doesn't fit with what they're doing when Embiid's out there, they've got a nice kind of supporting cast around him. I mean, with Nerlens Noel, with Ersan Ilyasova, you mentioned T.J. McConnell, who actually won't play today when they play the Bucks. He's out with a wrist injury.
Right.
But, you know, Nick Stauskas, Robert Covington, they've got a bunch of role players who kind of understand what they're there to do and are doing a good job. And while Embiid is obviously the big reason why this ship has finally started to turn, a lot of other guys are contributing. And I think it's interesting. They've won 2 games basically at the buzzer, the McConnell jumper, and then they had one, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, where Robert Covington scored a layup on a backdoor with under a second left to give them a win. Both those shots basically were made possible because Embiid was on the floor, and he got so much attention. Mm-hmm. So you had other guys getting the opportunity to shine and taking advantage of it, and past what it means in the win column that night, I think that's big for the growth of a group.
Always a pleasure, my friend. A lot of fun.
Thank you, sir.
Matt Leon, KYW Philadelphia, back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Sunbury Motors Kia says, if you want a brand new 2016 Kia,
you can have them.
Sunbury Motors Kia will not stock any new 2016 Kias after January 2017. This means you'll win with the deepest discounts on 2016s ever. In 2016, a Forte 5 was $21,795.
Not in 2017.
Buy one now for only $16,993.
That's $4,802 off.
In 2016, an Optima LX was $23,405.
Not now.
Here in January, pay just $18,979.
That's a $4,426 savings.
A 2016 Rio 5 was $19,550 in 2016.
Not now.
Buy one for only $15,957. All new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. If you want a 2016 Kia, Sunbury Motors Kia says you can have them. Save thousands on your 2016 Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf
and at sunburymotors.com.
Final half hour of the show. The complaint about too many bowl games. Why are so many people watching? We'll give you some of the TV numbers for the bowl games. I mean, all the bowl games. as to showing you that you throw the game on TV, they're going to watch. Great win for Penn State basketball on Saturday. Minnesota is not just a good defensive team. They're an excellent defensive team. They came into the game at a .887 defensive points per possession, which was 10th in the nation. I mean, that's their calling card. They try to lock you down on with their defense. Think about this. When they played Michigan State Wednesday night, the storyline was Michigan State blew out Minnesota at home, which they did. But as I pointed out in the broadcast, they said, you know, they may have blown them out, but, you know, Minnesota still only gave up 65 points in the game. Their problem was they didn't score any points. They only scored 47. But they only gave up 65 points. That was not one of those, hey, we got run out, we lost 80-62. They only gave up 65 points in that game. Well, Saturday, they played defense, but then Penn State, you may have seen them throw some wild shots off the backboard in that game. That was deliberate. And the reason is this. Reggie Lynch is a really good shot blocker, but he is not a return shot blocker. You're like, well, what does that mean? There are some guys, and Mike Watkins is one of them, that once they block a shot, they can pivot and come back to the weak side, and they have another chance of getting another shot block. And he's amazing. He can go back and get a weak side shot block after he's blocked one shot because of how quick he is. Reggie Lynch gets one shot at a block shot, and he takes it. If you throw it off the board, maybe it goes in, but you get weak side rebounds. And Penn State had 12 second half chance points, 12 second chance points in the second half. That was 40% of their point production in the second half. And keep in mind, Minnesota only scored 18 points in the entire half. One of the more difficult things to do, especially for a young team, is to hang your hat on your defense for long periods of time when you are not scoring. Because let's face it, players want to see the ball go in the bucket at the other end. That gets you energized and juiced. But Penn State's defense kept them in the game. Penn State right now is number one in conference play in field goal percentage defense, and they are second in the conference behind only Purdue in rebound margin right now. Indiana's here Wednesday.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great message there by Nathan Davis, by the way. Great message. Okay, time now for the sports bozo of the day. Antonio Brown, come on down. I mean, really. First of all, it'll have zero to do with the outcome. I think stories like these run their course in the media because it's sensationalistic, simplistic, you know, interesting, but it has zero to do with outcome of games. None. Zero. If you really think that once the hitting starts, that what was put out during the week has anything to do with it? No. If you're not motivated to play in the AFC Championship game with a chance to go to the Super Bowl, you don't belong there to begin with. But still, Antonio Brown, what are you doing? It's the one thing about him is it seems like it's too much about him and not enough about everybody else. From the outside looking in. And believe me, as a player, I think he's awesome. But he's your guy, he's your problem. So, there you go.
I would not be surprised if something comes down from the NFL. Hey, guys, if you're going to do that kind of thing, at least wait until the media come into the locker room and then fire up your phones at that point. But you'd think there'd be that certain sacred 5, 10, 15-minute cooling-off period where, you know, you close rank, you do what you got to do.
I'm surprised the NFL didn't charge him a rights fee. All right. Bowl games. There are 41 bowl games. There are too many bowl games. Until you realize people are watching. I have the numbers.
I'll admit, I watched more this year than I have in a very long time, but I kind of had a vested interest in it just with, you know, picking 40 games. I just wanted to keep tabs on them and, you know, keep track of my standings and yours and the other guys.
You can't refer to the suit as the other guys.
He's the other guy. He's the other guy. Suit. I could easily say defending, was it now three-time?
Yeah, three-time champion.
Three-time.
But I guess now that it's coming out now, actually Suit Light picked them.
We'll get one of our reporters on this and get to the bottom of it.
But here are the numbers. National championship game, 25.26 million viewers. Now, yes, down 3% from last year's title game, but 25.26. Peach Bowl, 19.3 million viewers, up 23% from last year. And that's from the other semifinal, not from the actual Peach Bowl itself. Fiesta Bowl, 19.2 million viewers, up 3% from last year. The Rose Bowl, Penn State, USC, 15.74 million viewers, up 16% from last year, the TV rating. Orange Bowl, Florida State, Michigan, 11.46 million viewers, up 28% from last year. Most watched Orange Bowl, excluding the playoffs, since 2008. Sugar Bowl, 9.5 million viewers, up 6% from last year. Citrus Bowl, LSU Louisville, 6.4 million viewers. Outback Bowl, Florida Iowa, 6.1 million viewers, up 116% from last year. Cotton Bowl. And again, you know how I feel about Cinderella. I think it's fun in the whole thing, but I also know that TV-wise, it wears out its welcome. Cinderella is adorable until you have to watch Cinderella. Cotton Bowl, Wisconsin, Western Michigan, Cinderella. 5.4 million viewers, outstanding, except it's down 40%. Music City Bowl, 5 million viewers, Tennessee, Nebraska. Belk Bowl, Virginia Tech, Arkansas, 4.9 million viewers, up 42%. Alamo Bowl, Oklahoma State and Colorado, 4.6 million viewers. Russell Athletic Bowl, Miami and West Virginia, 4.3 million viewers, up 1% from last year. Holiday Bowl, Minnesota, Washington State, 4.04 million viewers. Texas Bowl, Kansas State and Texas A&M, 3.8 million viewers. Las Vegas Bowl, San Diego State, Houston, ended up with 3.74 million viewers. Most watched Las Vegas Bowl since 2012. Liberty Bowl, Georgia TCU, 3.1 million viewers. Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit, at a robust 2:30 in the afternoon on Monday, December 26th, 3.01 million viewers, up 103% from last year. You got Baltimore, Washington, Boston, you got that New England corridor, paid off. Sun Bowl on CBS, 2.9 million viewers. Celebration Bowl, Grambling in North Carolina Central, 2.7 million viewers. That was at noon on Saturday, December 17th on ABC. It's up 6%. The Gator Bowl. Okay, now last year, and I'd like to point out something quickly here. Georgia Tech, Kentucky Gator Bowl. That's the Tax Slayer Bowl. 2.65 million viewers. Really good, except it's down 55% from Penn State, Georgia last year. Foster Farms Bowl on Fox, 2.6 million viewers. The Dollar General Bowl. remember I pointed out you get $550, they get 550 items at Dollar General.
That was great. What a stipend.
Well, listen to this. The Dollar General Bowl, Ohio University and Troy, Friday, December 23rd at 8 o'clock at night, 2.5 million viewers, up 7% from the year before, most watched Mobile Bowl since the 10-11 season. Pinstripe Bowl, with Western and Pitt, 2.4 million viewers. Penn State fans are going to get a cackle out of this. Least watched Pinstripe Bowl ever. Debuted in 2010. Poinsettia Bowl. Wednesday night, December 21st, 9 p.m. 2.4 million viewers, up 72% from last year. Armed Forces Bowl, Louisiana Tech and Navy, 2.34 million viewers, up 24%. Also, December 23rd at 4:30 in the afternoon on a Friday, heading into the holiday weekend. Second largest Armed Forces Bowl audience in 10 years. Birmingham Bowl. This is a Thursday afternoon, December 29th at 2 in the afternoon. 2.3 million viewers. Cactus Bowl, Baylor, Boise State, 2.3 million viewers. Military Bowl, Wake Forest against Temple, 2.1 million viewers. St. Petersburg Bowl, Mississippi State, Miami of Ohio, 2.05 million viewers. Heart of Dallas Bowl, Army, North Texas, 1.6 million viewers. Boca Raton Bowl, Western Kentucky and Memphis, 1.6 million viewers. FCS National Championship, James Madison and Youngstown State on Saturday the 7th. 1.56 million viewers. Largest FCS National Championship audience ever. Camellia Bowl, Appalachian State and Toledo. Saturday, December 17th at 5:30 in the evening, 1.5 million viewers. The New Mexico Bowl, sponsored by Gildan. New Mexico against Texas San Antonio, 1.4 million viewers. The Bahamas Bowl, 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, December 23rd, 1.4 million viewers. The Hawaii Bowl, which was opposite the NFL game between Houston and Cincinnati, 1.36 million viewers on Christmas Eve. New Orleans Bowl, Southern Mississippi against Louisiana Lafayette, 1.33 million viewers. Independence Bowl, NC State Vanderbilt, 1.27 million viewers. It's at 5 o'clock on Monday the 26th. The Idaho Potato Bowl, that 61-50 shootout. Idaho and Colorado State, 1.14 million viewers, up 6% from last year on Thursday, December 22nd. The last rated bowl has one interesting distinction. Tulsa and Central Michigan, 794,000 viewers. It is the only bowl game that had fewer than 1 million viewers. Let's give you some context now. The average SportsCenter audience is 465,000 viewers. The average Tuesday through Friday Scott Van Pelt SportsCenter, and you say, why not Monday? You have to take the Monday Night Football component out of it. He averages about 3.5 million viewers after a Monday Night Football game. The average Scott Van Pelt audience Tuesday through Friday for SportsCenter is 669,000. That's still less than the Miami Beach Bowl at 2:30 in the afternoon on Monday, December 19th. First Take averages about between 250 and 350,000 viewers. That's half of the Miami Beach Bowl. So if you're wondering why ESPN owns and operates 13 bowl games and why they carry all these bowl games, guess what? People are watching them. There's only one bowl game under a million viewers. Now let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's see here. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Okay? Of the 41 bowl games, actually it's 42. You got to include the Celebration Bowl. 31 of the 42 have over 2 million viewers. Okay, so 41 out of 42 have over a million. 31 out of the 42 have over 2 million viewers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Let's see. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. 18 out of 42 have over 3 million. 15 out of 42 have over 4 million. 11 out of 42 have over 5 million viewers. And 5 of them have over 12 million viewers. So if you're wondering why they just run out one bowl game after another, guess what? There are plenty of you out there watching. Those are interesting numbers. Very interesting numbers. I thought that we'd pass it along to you. That was just fun to do it.
I'd have thought some of them that was that would had very, very poor attendance would be under like a million watching.
No.
Like that Miami game in the Marlins Stadium, and it looked like hardly anyone was in the place.
Well, but again, that was the lowest rated of them all. All but one game drew over 1 million viewers.
I was surprised though at the Northwestern Pitt game, the lowest rated Pinstripe Bowl. I mean, out of all the games, I mean, there were kind of a handful I was looking forward to seeing just because of the fact with Northwestern being a, you know, a Big Ten opponent of Penn State, and of course Penn State now with Pitt. Now, Cat had a little bit of value. Had a little bit of value to me to watch that one. Plus you had made comparisons to Northwestern in quite a bit of your college bowl talk over the past several weeks. That kind of got me intrigued to that game.
Well, I mean, listen to these other numbers. Let's just take the early bowl games here. These are the early ones. New Mexico Bowl was number 5 in all in sports, number 14 on cable overall. Camellia Bowl, number 4 in sports, 13 on cable. New Orleans Bowl was number 6 in sports that day, 15 on cable. The Miami Beach Bowl was the 5th rated sports show of the day and was 13th in cable overall, including Walking Dead and everything like that. The Boca Raton Bowl was the number 1 sports show on December 20th, 11th on cable overall. Poinsettia Bowl was the number 2 overall sports show on December 21st, 10th on cable overall. The Potato Bowl, number 5 in sports, 13th overall on cable. Bahamas Bowl was 3rd in sports on December 23rd, 60th on cable overall. Armed Forces Bowl was 2nd in sports, 8th in cable overall. And the Dollar General Bowl on December 23rd was the number 1 sports show overall and was the number 1 show on cable overall on December 23rd. Between Ohio and Troy. It was the number 1 show on cable for the whole day. Even beat out the Christmas card on Hallmark. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. A brand new Hyundai Elantra from Sunbury Motors Hyundai can be yours for only $215 per month. This is not a lease payment. $215 per month on a brand new Hyundai Elantra with America's best warranty, a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors says a 2017 Hyundai Elantra is the absolute best buy for your buck in 2017. Sunbury Motors was voted best car dealership, best quick service, and best body shop. Now add best new compact vehicle with the Hyundai Elantra, and you just made the best decision of 2017. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. There's 34 to choose from, starting at $215 per month, tax and tags extra, at 2.99% APR for 84 months to qualified buyers. Sunbury Motors Hyundai declares 2017 the year of the Elantra. The bowl games in the opening week are the ones I think received the most criticism. Yet here's the bottom line. Every bowl game in the opening week was in the top five in sports for the day, except for one, which was sixth. All of them made the top 15 on cable overall. Every one of them made the top 15 in cable overall for the day. The Troy-Ohio game was number one. 2.5 million viewers, number one in cable, let alone sports. The only other sports programs to make cable's top 10 during that same time frame, that opening week, two were NFL games and NFL-related programming for Monday Night Football on ESPN and Thursday Night Football on the NFL Network. And the other one was the Kentucky-Louisville college basketball game, which was a great game. You know how many times Fox Sports 1 and NBC Sportsnet showed up in the daily top 10 of cable rankings that week? Go ahead, give it a guess.
I will say neither of them did.
Zero, exactly. The top Fox Sports 1 program for that week was the UFC preliminaries at 679,000 viewers. That is still 100,000 fewer viewers than the Miami Beach Bowl game got. You asked about Skip and Shannon, undisputed. 150,000 viewers. More than 500,000 more people watched the Miami Beach Bowl than watched Skip and Shannon undisputed that week. And the Miami Beach Bowl, again, was the only bowl game under a million. You wonder why there are so many bowl games? Guess what? People watch. Live sports programming is far more appealing to the audience than two people arguing. Oh, wait a minute. We already have that show. Then I better rephrase.
That's a ratings grabber for us.
Lawrence is sitting at home going, what did that mean? I mean, for example, let's use an example here. Kevin Hur always talked to me about streaming numbers. And the streaming numbers on WKOK for high school football, off the charts. It's off the charts. I mean, our streaming numbers are great for live sporting events. And I think you have a... You probably have a pretty good handle on the overall numbers, too, right? They're really good.
Seawolves Grove Seals football over on Eagle 107, phenomenal numbers.
Yeah. See, I mean, people want live sports. Again, these numbers I'm talking about here from that opening week, I am not talking about the Rose Bowl or the national championship game. And I'm talking about the Armed Forces Bowl, the Miami Beach Bowl, the Poinsettia Bowl, and, of course, the number one rated Dollar General Bowl.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.